discussing the latest developments out of Orlando, its impact on the Celtics, and where the NBA goes from here. Welcome to a special edition of the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Here are your hosts, Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell.
In this crazy day, in a crazy month of a crazy year that all of us will remember for the rest of our lives, today was a day where there were so many texts and emails and phone calls going back and forth. And at one point, we got caught up in just what you heard. How's this going to start? What are we going to play at the start? Is it Celtics tonight? Is it a special edition of this show? And it finally, it took so much energy going back and forth. It finally hit me. Who cares what the first 30 seconds sounds like, which was the lesson to me that we can all get caught up sometimes in the nonsense and lose sight of the big picture. We are inside TD Garden tonight. As you know, we were to bring you game one of the Eastern Conference semifinal series between the Celtics and the Toronto Raptors, which, as you just heard, we believe is going to begin on Sunday, but nothing is like set in stone. And that is another theme for the next hour. Nothing is set in stone. We're all sort of flying blind. And you know what? Maybe that's not the worst thing in the world for all of us right now. So instead, for the second time in 6 months, the NBA is basically at a pause, at a crossroads in American history. Max is here with me, 6 feet away. Fear not, because in addition to everything else that's going on, we have that to deal with too. This is what I was thinking of walking into that, Max. You were alive in 1968. I was not. That's the only year you can even begin, I think, to compare to this one in modern history as far as social unrest during a presidential election year. And that was without a global pandemic that's about to kill 200,000 Americans. We're going to take this next little bit of time here to do what we feel needs to be done. We're going to update you in a second here on everything that's going on, what we know, what was going to happen with the league. But this is where I don't want to say defer to you, because we've done everything together for 19 years, but I'm dying to have you tell everybody, because we've been talking and texting the last couple of days, your thoughts on this latest turn in a world that by the day continually seems like some sort of fever dream.
It's absolutely insane. When you think about all the things that are going on, Black Lives Matter, men and women getting killed, people of color, people coming out, voicing their opinions. I couldn't be prouder of these young players now. People asked me questions about them and said, so what is it about them that, you know, you guys didn't have? I said, first of all, there's something called social media. What you have is millions of people who follow each player in a social media standpoint. They do that. And then on top of that, I said the biggest thing is the fact that financially, the players right now are conglomerates in themselves. When have you known that you had a player in the 80s that had enough money to build a school and to graduate people in that school the way LeBron James has done? So I understand. The thing that I said before about all this to me is, even in playing these games and protesting these games, this isn't checkers. This is chess. So what is your end game? If you're going to protest and you're going to postpone games, I do understand that, especially with the Milwaukee Bucks that being right in their backyard. I do understand that and how it affected them. Could they have gone about it another way to tell Orlando, hey, that we're not coming out to play? Yeah, they could have. But the message was there. So they've done that. Mine is, now you say you're not going to play games. Your biggest adversary has been your commissioner. Your commissioner.
Advocate.
Has been, he's been huge. He's done everything that he could possibly do to get you to listen, to hear what you say, and to put that stuff into motion. I was around with David Stern. David Stern wouldn't have had this. And you can ask most players that I know who play under that regime, David Stern wouldn't have had the inmates running the asylum. That wouldn't have happened. But now what the commissioner does, he listens, he puts input, and he doesn't find guys, but he listens and he puts things into motion to help them express how they feel. This has been absolutely amazing to me to watch him and his players, because they've now become partners. It's a partnership. And they've done that with the NBA. And now that the NBA seems to be the secretariat of all these events, everybody's seeing what the NBA does, makes me that much more proud of the players and what they've accomplished so far.
I think any of us that have been fortunate enough to work in sports for a living have always been proudest of it when sports leads society rather than follows it, whether you're talking about what's happening now and the NBA, the first to shut down, taking the lead on the social justice issues. This goes back to, you know, baseball in 1947. Jackie Robinson, one of the things that often gets overlooked is that Jackie Robinson made his debut in the major leagues 17 years before the Civil Rights Act. Before the Civil Rights Act, sports leading society rather than following it. This, I think, what we have all, what do the two of us know in the big picture? But we're the two of us, and we're talking with all of you now because I think we're all feeling a lot of the same things right now. And there are a million different issues, but at the end, this comes down to what is happening, which is what I want to get to now and get you caught up, and the issues in the last 24 hours. But the bigger picture, of course, is why. And I think our world now, we are inundated with what. And then choose a side to be on, if you're for it or against it, before anyone ever asks the question, why are any of these things happening? Here's what is happening right now. There's going to be another meeting tonight that will involve the players and the league, and that is to figure out how to resume the playoffs, because that generally was the feeling. Last night was very emotional. The day began with the Milwaukee Bucks sitting out their Game 5 against the Orlando Magic. And even now, everybody's so politically correct is even the wrong word, but when you say the players sat out or they walked off, well, really it was a wildcat strike, if technically, because they weren't under... Nobody cares. They didn't play the game. They chose not to play the game. They stayed in their locker room and used that time to get officials from Wisconsin and the attorney general and the governor on the phone, which is a really clever way to do it. Again, there's the secondary issue. Should they have told the Magic sooner? We'll get into that. That started the ball rolling. The other teams didn't want to play. The games got postponed yesterday. The NBA was behind it.
Well, the Celtics and Toronto had talked about this
that
beforehand.
Gets overlooked. It's funny that there was... And Jaylen Brown, of all people, and we're jumping around a little bit, but Jaylen Brown, we don't need to say anymore. We've been saying this about Jaylen for years. What you're all seeing now, we've been privileged enough to know for years that he was going to be this guy. I just couldn't imagine the circumstance happening soon enough that he'd have to be the guy at 23 years old that he is, but that's the world, you know, in which we live. But it was Jaylen Brown who last night in this players' meeting, according to multiple reports, and another dynamic of this, which is fascinating, is how little media there is inside the bubble anyway. There's only a select few down there, and obviously they are kept at bay. Remember, you have 30, 40% of the league isn't there. These are only the teams that are still in the bubble that are participating in this meeting, but the discussion was, should we continue the season? And reports came out that somewhere between there being a vote to there being something of a straw poll like you take in a jury, which you're not supposed to do after you first finish the trial. You say, okay, where's everybody kind of stand on this? That the Lakers and Clippers didn't really want to play and they walked out of the room. Clearly, there's a lot of emotion here. There's a secondary element, which we will get to in a second, which is how much is the human pressure being placed on all of these human beings being kept from their families and all of being in the bubble that was weighing on this, that you're asking these young men to make these important decisions, and it's been very difficult for a lot of them. By the way, not just the young men. Players can have their families come back and join them in the bubble starting the second round. Coaches can't. So you're talking about going 2-3 months now. These guys have been down there almost 2 months. And so that weighs into the overall frustration, which is why I thought it was good to take the night, have everybody reconvene in the morning, with, you know, fresh.
But that's the brilliance, really, of what I've seen the NBA do, is the fact that they've stepped back. Everybody, yeah, there was a thing where people would say in football, take a knee, get your mind together, find out what your actions are going to be. And essentially, that's what they've done. They've gone on to evaluate, think about it, put it in perspective, and now they come back in. And that's when you get honest dialogue. You don't get honest dialogue when you're arguing. You don't. You get emotional. No. If LeBron James reportedly, sources said that LeBron James didn't say anything in this meeting. LeBron James is a guy that a lot of these guys follow. Patrick Beverly, who was on the other team, before they were talking about coming back, LeBron James said he was coming back to play. Patrick Beverly, who plays for the Clippers, said, if LeBron James is coming back, we're coming back. So I'm interested to see, maybe LeBron did exactly what we're talking about right now. Instead of exploding, he sat back, thought about it, and now they're going to have this meeting.
All right, let's circle back. I just want to get everybody caught up because that essentially what happened. And LeBron, by the way, he wasn't silent on Twitter yesterday, by the way. He kind of went off as I think everybody's sort of expressing their frustration, and we'll get to the why in a second. But just sort of finishing the what. Today, everybody reconvened. The decision was made to continue the season. Now, that's led to another meeting tonight in which you have to figure out, okay, how are we going to continue the season and when? Are you going to take 2 days off? Are you going to take 3 days off? You're watching the trickle-down effect again of the NBA, the WNBA, Major League Baseball, individual teams were basically saying we're not going to play tonight. The NHL really had no choice but to take a couple of days off, which is what they're going to do in the middle of their playoffs. And this brings to the issue of what does this accomplish and was it the right choice? And this is what you started to get to, and this is where I wanted to lead the first part of this discussion, was about the decision to go home. Because you know there were people, and again, I'm going to say this once. I don't think it needs to be said to any of you who are with us now in our little mini bubble now, and you've taken the time out of your day to share this conversation with us. You are probably of the understanding that reasonable people can disagree on topics and have a discussion about it. There were, I think, some reasonable people that felt, you know what? Everybody should go home. This isn't a time for sports. And it's not. What I said all day yesterday, and it's interesting because when we talked about first having this conversation, it was yesterday before the decision was made to continue the season, and it was possible that it was going to end. And my feeling all along, and for 5 months, as I think most people who look like I look should be doing, it's a time to listen, not to talk. That streak's going to end tonight. But the primary thing to me, rule 101 of protesting, don't give away the cameras. And my concern from the beginning, from the time that, listen, I think Kyrie Irving was, I think he was true to himself. I think he was trying to do what he thought was right when he said we shouldn't be playing. I think he felt that genuinely. I saw a lot of people yesterday on Twitter tweeting about Kyrie. People owe Kyrie an apology. He was right. These games shouldn't have been played. I didn't agree. I respectfully disagreed with Kyrie then. I disagree with him now. And my hope was that the realization would sink in that there is no substitute for the platform that the NBA playoffs are going to provide these players to state whatever. And by the way, even taking a couple of days off could end up being the perfect thing, because you and I, Max, are having a conversation right now that a lot of people are having, filling, quote-unquote, filling airtime that was supposed to be with games, and we're talking about things that matter a lot more.
Well, I think that is really the choice. And you look at some of the WNBA players, some of the NBA players, some of the football players, basketball. I mean, it's just a combination of a lot of people who are together. And I like that. It's a sense of community. It's a sense of hurt. And I know that a lot of people of color feel really strong about what is going on and in their world. And people who are not of color feel the same way about what is going on. But the effect that it's had, and this is what I truly believe, racism isn't going to be stopped in a day. It's not going to be stopped tomorrow. What players are doing right now, they are brick masons. And what they're doing is laying one brick at a time. And that is what has to happen at the end. You're not going to change the way society has felt for 40-something years, 50, 100 years, 400 years. You're not going to – the switch is not going to be like, okay, well, the players are not going to play games, so – they're going to hold that from us, so we're going to stop being racist. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
And here's what struck me about that yesterday with the players, these athletes who've dedicated their life to their craft, who are at an age where they are taking over a leadership role when leaders in our country are abdicating that, and they haven't done it before. They're doing the best that they can. But I think one of the things that really struck me about it was they are coming to the realization that hundreds of years of young people, well-intentioned, diligent, patriotic, all have run into, which is that in that world, in the world of real life, not the political arena, but the societal arena, you can't walk in there and throw an 80-yard touchdown pass. Real life is 3 yards and a cloud of dust. Change is incremental, and we don't know what the short-term and long-term effect of the social justice movement in the NBA. We don't know what it is now. We don't know what it will be. We just want it to continue, and I get the frustration when it doesn't happen overnight. But I think what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was going to happen whether or not the NBA playoff games happen. We just don't know if at some point, we don't know how to make, we all want it to stop. We don't know how.
I just believe that at the end, when you and I were talking, and it's about your leverage and what you have and how you're going to present that, there are going to be some words we're going to hear from Doc Rivers, which are, for me, this is like Martin Luther King when he said it. I was just like floored, and I've been using that all day in any port that I might, any person who might ask me some questions about it, anytime I've been on air. And when Doc Rivers went on to say, you know, it was just astounding to hear him talk about this country. We love this country, but
I would imagine most of you have heard it by now. If you haven't, we are going to hear it. It's not just Doc Rivers. What I want to hear, because I don't think the words, listen, Max and I can talk over and over again. You've heard us talk for hours and hours. Listening to people who have experienced this and listen to the tone of the sound that you're going to hear from some of these athletes, coaches, people of color, and what they have gone through. Listen to the words that they're saying when you realize the world in which they have been forced to live and why this anger exists.
Let me say this. This is not a surprise.
Well,
everybody's like, this is brand new. This just happened.
No,
I've been around 65 years. It's going to be my 65th birthday. There are a lot of things that have not changed since then. What racism has done and where racism is, it's changed paths. It's gone in different directions. You might not be able to stay in the community. They were talking about one study where it was some people of color who had a house, and they got their house
appraisal.
And then they came back in, and then they took all the stuff out and made sure it wasn't anything or that looked like it was people of color. They got appraised again, and the value of the house went up.
40% higher, yeah.
So that is how racism, and that's how biases have lived and they have moved. I'm telling you from what I know. I'm telling you from a person who was in North Carolina, who lived there, who grew up there, who lived in the South during that time where you had these situations where you had a bathroom where there was a water fountain, or if there was a colored dressing room, or it was a white area to go to. So we're like, oh my God, this is just happening. This is not happening. It's just not happening like tomorrow. It's just not, oh my God, it just happened. No, this has been happening. And that's why I say I applaud the players. But as you said, the biggest thing about this is going to be time. Time and building brick by brick for them to stop and do what they're doing now. Maybe this is a moment. Maybe this is the moment.
I think you have inadvertently made the point by saying, of course, this is nothing new and this has gone on forever. But now we have a group of powerful athletes in the spotlight who are going to shine their light on this and take their turn in the generational spotlight and their spin of the earth to take their shot at trying to stop it. All right, we have coming up for in the least surprising development of all time, Grandy and Max talked too much and went over in the first segment that they gave us to do this, which is probably the least dangerous thing that could happen when you give us live mics on this topic for an hour. We're going to check in a little later with Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe because he is inside the bubble, one of the few media members who is down there. It's just a different perspective. And why the Celtics and the other NBA players have gone quiet today, you may have noticed that. You had not heard from anybody. That is deliberate. On behalf of the players around the league and the Celtics specifically, when we come back, we're going to listen to that Doc Rivers thing. If you have not heard it yet, it was, I don't think he unnecessarily intended it to be, but it was a call of arms that will, if your heart is beating and you haven't heard it yet, it will strike you. That's coming up next.
It's a special edition of the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to a special edition of the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Clippers played their game. They were scheduled to play their game five with the, or game six with Dallas. That was one of the games that got postponed. After their game the other night, they took the 3-2 lead on the Dallas Mavericks. Doc Rivers, who had been asked before the game, it kind of didn't, it almost, he gave the impression that he didn't have anything to say about what was going on. And the reason is because he was saving it for after the game. This is someone, Max, you and I have known for a long time. I've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours with Doc on the air. I'm not going to pretend that we don't have a significant relationship, that, you know, we haven't been friends for a long time. So am I biased? Yeah, I'm biased. But that doesn't make me wrong when I say this is one of the most extraordinary things I've heard a player, coach, anybody connected to the league in 22 years I have been in the league say. And after watching 2 weeks of written speeches and people trying to write things down and say them out loud in a way to convince people of something and make them feel something, Doc did more in 2 minutes and 15 seconds here than I have seen anybody do in any convention speech in the last 2 weeks.
All you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing why we keep loving this country and this country does not love us back. And it's really so sad. Like, I should just be a coach. And it's so often reminded of my color. You know, it's just really sad. We got to do better. But we got to demand better. Like, we got, you know, it's funny. We protest, and they send riot guards, right? They send people in riot outfits. They go to Michigan with guns, and they're spitting on cops, and nothing happens. The training has to change in the police force. The unions have to be taken down in the police force. My dad was a cop. I believe in good cops. We're not trying to defund the police and take all their money away. We're trying to get them to protect us, just like they protect everybody else.
Among those who tweeted out the link to that and praised it was Barack Obama yesterday. It made me want to run through a wall. I can't imagine, Max, what your reaction was to hearing it.
What Doc Rivers said and how he put it and the emotion that was with it put me in the same line of hearing Martin Luther King speak live when I was young and hearing the whole Washington, D.C., I have a dream speech. That was the same kind of, you're going to hear, and I would stop there. And this is why Doc is really good with this. He's always been good with the media. But for him to have a father who was a police officer, mm-hmm. he's speaking from experience. For him being black, he's speaking from experience. So you can listen to somebody else who kind of knows the lay of the land. But those words that he echoed, they will go down in history that my kids' kids and other kids are going to hear after you and I and Doc is long gone. They were so deep. And you think about Martin Luther King has been dead a long time. He passed away he got killed a long time ago. But those words that he has used has been the basis for all kind of things that have gone on in speeches and I Have a Dream and how he, Doc Rivers, what he said, that spoke volumes to how people of color feel about this country. And I'll speak from the experience of my father. Manny Maxwell was in Vietnam in 1968, got wounded, still has shrapnel in his body, came back to the States. We're on a trip going to Georgia, southern Georgia from North Carolina. Stopped in a place called Waycross, Georgia. Stopped at a gas station. My brother and I go into the bathroom. I guess the man didn't see us. We go in. We come back out. My mom and my sister want to follow. And he says, no, you can't go in there. He said, no. He said, your bathroom is out in the grease pits. You're in the garage out there where it's dirty. And my father went off. He said, I fought for this country. I almost died for this country. And you just tell me I can't use the damn bathroom? And that is how people of color have felt about different things. I went to my Instagram account and I posted one thing, and it was, again, back during this time of, I was at a beach in South Carolina, and it was called Atlantic Beach. It called it the Black Pearl. Essentially, black people, it was a fence that went from the water, from the beach, all the way out in the water as long as the football field, so you could have separate but equal in the ocean, in the damn ocean. That you couldn't be together in the ocean. Like something was going to wash off of your body. So there are things that, you know, and now you look and you see this gentleman get shot in the back 7 times in front of his kids. And if you have no other compassion, nothing in your body about him, you still think about your kids and the harm that is done to them. They're sitting in the back seat. And I can't imagine my baby sitting in the back seat and watching me get shot and the fear that they're going to have, that they're going to be next.
And this is why I believe this is happening now, because the humanity, the empathy as a human that you feel when you hear Doc talk, when you hear what you just had to say, we recognize what you have had to live with, what people like you, Max, that look like you, have had to live with your whole lives. I have never understood and don't understand now why people who look like me have allowed it. And that is the issue. That is what has to change. That is what we're going to be talking about for much of this next half hour. First, we're going to check in with Gary Washburn when we come back from the Globe, because he is in the bubble. He can get us kind of the latest of what's going on down there with the Celtics. And then this conversation, which is so overdue in so many ways, will continue.
You're listening to a special edition of the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
As Max and I have been coming to you during the seeding games and the scrimmage games and the playoff games from our little bubble here in the Celtics locker room at TD Garden, there are actually some people who are putting in the work in Orlando. One of them is our friend Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe, who's been kind enough to join us here. We want to get a quick update on what's going on and kind of bring you into this conversation where Max and I, as you can imagine, you've had dinner with the two of us before, and you can only imagine how deep we've gotten ourselves into trouble already, speaking our mind when they give us a free hour of airtime to say whatever we want. But we're going to cover what's going on. But the first thing I wanted to know, and I ask of anybody who's down there, how are you doing?
It's all right. I mean, it's a routine. You get used to it every day. You test every day. You have to take your oxygen saturation and temperature every day, put it in the phone app. And once you start getting used to the kind of the medical things you have to do, it becomes like being in college on campus. You just, you know, you jump on a bus and you go to the arena, go to practice. You come back to your room. There's a pool. There's a gym. There's a place to run. Like, you just kind of get used to kind of making life in one place, and you know, get a chance to go anywhere. You know, we're allowed to golf and fish every like once a week, things like that. But you know, your life is here. Your life is basketball, and it's a smorgasbord of basketball, especially when there was all 22 teams here, where there was practices every day or games. So you get a chance to basically everyone's here. So. There's some drawbacks to it, obviously. I mean, you don't get a chance to go anywhere, but there's also a chance to cover the league and cover something historical. So I think the most of us who are here try to look at it that way.
I think we all understand the historic nature of it and how it's been. Tell us how the last 24 hours have been. And with everything that has gone down, how you felt about it, and what you sense the players are going through?
I think the players are feeling helpless in a sense. I think there was a lot of momentum once they got down here about the names on the back of the jerseys, of slogans, and the Black Lives Matter on the floor, and their ability to say anything about any social issue they wanted during interviews, of the Breonna Taylor situation, encouraging people to vote. I mean, all types. They could say what they want. And I think this started out with a lot of momentum. And then a couple things just happened. One, guys are getting a little homesick. They're getting a little tired of the bubble. Two, the Jacob Blake situation happened, and which reminded them that the real world is still existing and that there's still African-Americans being killed by the police or shot. And so a lot of players begin to ask, what are we doing here, and why are we here, and is our purpose being met here? Are we just playing ball and entertaining folks? And I think the last 24, 48 hours has been filled with just guys trying to figure out their purpose here, what they want to do, why they're here, and what can they do to improve their conditions in terms of the conditions of African Americans, conditions of people in these neighborhoods. And is playing basketball one of those things that they can help? Or do they just need to go home? And so I think it's just been kind of a major discussion. And not all these players are the same. There's, I'm sure, players that were ready to go home, and there's players that are like, no, we need to finish this out.
Was Jaylen Brown one of the you hear about Jaylen Brown being one of the voices who said, we need to stay here. We need to finish what we've started, and we need to keep these microphones in front of us. We always hear that was him. Was that him we've heard about?
Yeah, I think Jalen's concern was, listen, if y'all are doing this just because y'all want to go home, we need to stay here. Like, if we're going to walk away from this, then let's be on the front lines and struggling and going through the struggles and going through the situations in our communities. We are not going back home to go by the pool or to go to our favorite restaurant or to hang out or to party. This is not why we're going home, if this is what we're going to go home for. And so I think Jaylen wanted to make sure that the players had the same, all of the same purpose in mind, that if we're going to go, if we're going to blow this up and we're going to leave the bubble and we're going to end the season and we're going to make a lot of create a lot more issues for ourselves in terms of the collective bargaining agreement and the owners and the relationship between the players and the owners, and all that's going to blow up. Okay, things will never be the same. And the generation after them will feel that too, from the collective bargaining agreement and all that. If we're going to do this, we got to be on the front line. It cannot be because we want to go home and we want the comforts of home and we want to hang with our woman and we want to go swimming and we want to, you know, play video games. We can't be that. It has to be that we're on the front lines. And I think Jaylen tried to emphasize that. Like, If not, let's finish this off and let's do what we're supposed to do here because we have a platform.
Gary, how hard is it to cover a story that obviously it affects all of us, but it's going to affect some people more as human beings? You're in the middle of something that is obviously, as you mentioned, is historic. This is something very unique in your line of work and our line of work that is going on right now. How difficult is it for Gary Washburn, the human being, to be in that bubble and to try to cover this while the rest of the world, as you said, is going on around us?
I mean, I don't think it's historic. I don't think it's something that's difficult. I just think you have to understand that, I mean, these young men, you know, are more aware of their communities than they ever have been before. I think that there's a perception because of these guys are millennials or Generation Zers or whatever you want to call them, that they're only concerned with Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, and they're only concerned with their marketability and what's the next Drake song coming out. Like, that's all they're concerned about. That's not true. These guys are reading up on their communities. They're learning a lot more about their environments, the world around them. It doesn't always involve playing basketball. And I think the one player who is definitely probably a different person than we remember is Jason Tatum. And Jason is definitely, I think, taking some pages from Jalen's book in terms of learning about his environment, speaking out more and saying he has a voice. And so I think it's actually refreshing to cover these young men with these voices. I don't have a problem with it at all. There is a world that goes outside around us that's going on outside the bubble. But I also think it's neat to see the NBA conduct a world where it's been safe, and where people have been able to resume play. The games are back. We have exciting games. The different
atmosphere. You know what? You're going on and on. You know what? You have sidestepped that question. He asked you how you're doing and how you're dealing with this. Let me finish now, as you said. That you're in an environment that you don't have any social action other than the guys around you. That has to be tough. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like. Well, what are we going to do? Oh, well, we're going fishing. Hey, what are we going to do next?
Difficult, but you get used to it because you're on the same. Everyone's going through the same struggle, Max. You do not. No one is going. But you see the officials, the referees. We see them around campus. Those guys are hanging out at the pool, drinking wine. Like, everyone's in the same boat. I've ran around and jogged around this thing. I see Brad Stevens walking around outside and getting some exercise. I see Celtics coaches. I see Lakers coaches. Like, everyone's doing the same thing. So no one has it worse than any other person. So I think you kind of bond with that in a sense that we're all going through this, that we're all dealing with the bad food they're giving us and all of the stuff that's dead and all of the above. I think it's kind of you kind of bond because of that, to be honest with you. I think that when we all go back to our respective homes and next season happens, whether it's an empty arenas or where, we're all going to look at each other who were here the whole time, yep, and kind of nod our heads and be like, we made it through.
Yeah.
Because remember, Max, there's bus drivers down here getting tested every day. There's, you know, there's
the barbers, yep,
down here. There's referees. Everybody, there's connected with the league.
So you're saying it's like a fraternity, right? It's essentially, this is like a fraternity being together. Oh, let me ask you this one question. I hate to dominate this conversation, but and this is the crazy part of me, because I really want to know, what's the first thing you're going to eat when you get back home?
I had no Mexican food, no Chinese food, no Vietnamese food, something like that, man. Like, really, the food here, I mean, I'm not ripping league, and we can order room service and just cost extra. The package that we're down here on includes food. And the food here is, I mean, there's some days, it's the other day, they gave us grilled cheese sandwiches, garlic knots, and tomato bisque. We are 12 years old. When's the last time you guys had a grilled cheese sandwich? Like, I cannot remember the last time I literally myself made a grilled cheese sandwich. Like, they gave I said, we are like in middle school. Grilled cheese sandwich.
If, I mean, if, If nothing else, Gary, you got the title for the book now, Grilled Cheese and Garlic Knots, 2 months in the NBA bubble. Hey,
I mean,
real
no
quick.
No vegetable, no meat, so that's what we're dealing with. But, yeah, that, I mean, there's various restaurants in Boston I will be hitting up when I return. They will have my business.
All right, we're all going on the fly here. Are you here on Sunday for the Celtics?
Yes, here on Sunday. Yeah. The season, well, I've been told, will start Saturday. They're, quote-unquote, still deciding it. There's no way they're going to release something this late and say, oh, yeah, we're playing tomorrow.
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
So Saturday, I think, is when the Wednesday games will be resumed, and then Sunday is when the Thursday games will be resumed.
All right, Gary Washburn coming eventually to a restaurant in Boston near you.
Man,
he's going to enjoy it.
Gary, I'm going to send you a damn care package. Can that get through?
Yeah. Matt, send me anything. It will get through. I'd appreciate that.
Gary, take care. We're going to talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe in the bubble in Orlando. Obviously, we knew this was going to fly by fast. We got to take a quick break, and then Max and I will have our final thoughts. And if you ever wanted to hear what's that they used to say about our great friend and hero Tommy Heinsohn, Tommy Unvarnished, that's what they call it over at NBC Boston. Grandy and Max Unvarnished on this fascinating and unique time in our history, and hopefully a time that we can all make our lives better than they were before and use the time that we have now been given to investigate all of it. We'll be back to wrap it up.
It's a special edition of the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to a special edition of the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You guys know, because we've been telling you for 19 years together, it's an honor to be with you for every game and to have been, we've spent all this time with you over these years, but especially tonight when we try to figure out, to me, the thing that just keeps getting at me is the people who don't understand the connection between why the players, what would make them not want to play, and why there's this postponement, why we're discussing the issues we're discussing now, and then the sort of external people who are hammering home that divide for political purposes. I couldn't figure this out, Max. Do you want the first word or the last word? What's more important?
You go ahead, Sean.
Well, I kind of wanted to do this together, but my thing is this, because we've had this conversation, you and I, off the air many times, which is that it's a dangerous time to be on the air. Because cancel culture is real. That's a real thing. It is. And we've been trained to be afraid to speak our truth, or so bold that we just type it whenever we want into an anonymous computer screen that we become numb to it. And there's got to be a happy medium in there. And even if there isn't, NBA players yesterday reminded me that there are things more important than living in fear for your job. And having conversations can never be a bad thing. It can never, discussing the issues can never be bad. I've watched comments from leaders today, and you could probably tell by the way I said it, I just use finger quotes. And you better believe I'm using that term loosely. People in the administration, people calling the NBA too political, calling these men privileged, disorganized, and they're, you know what? Some of these are 22-year-olds. They are patriots, and they are trying to lead. And that is your job as leaders. You're supposed to be leading, but the void in leadership is being filled by 22 and 23-year-old kids here who, by the way, are not privileged to be in the NBA. They've worked their entire life to be in the NBA. They probably put in a lot more work than a lot of people who are sitting in fancy jobs right now to be elite in the world at what they do, because you don't get to be in the NBA because of the family you were born into. You don't get to be in the NBA because you were born lucky. There's nothing to do with privilege. There's nothing wrong with being privileged. I think people say that too. They look down on people, or you're good or you're bad or you're this or you're that because you have money or you don't have money. People are privileged. It happens. You don't choose it. You didn't choose your race, Max. I didn't choose mine. We didn't choose our lot in life. But these are people who worked, and the disrespect towards them because they're trying to lead. And this is kind of my point. If I got to say one thing tonight in the few minutes that we've been allotted here to say, it's this. please, whatever your feeling is about the NBA players and their decisions here, don't let anyone make it political. This is not political. And tonight, what we're saying, you don't get to hear this on CNN or Fox, because on those networks, they have to appeal to their base to draw ratings. And that's show business. That's fine. That's how you draw ratings and make money. It's how you win elections, too, by the way. And those two things are way too tied together. But they can't say, you're not going to get on CNN or Fox somebody saying, you know what, you can stand for the anthem or kneel for the anthem and be a patriot. Both of those things. It's not mutually exclusive. You get to do what you want to do. You could love the police and rail against police brutality. You can believe in protesting and still want the looters locked up. And how do I know this isn't political? Because NBA players didn't sit out these games so they could investigate a freeze on raising the Social Security age. Okay, this is not political. Listen to Doc Rivers. Listen to Robert Ori. Listen to Dominic Smith. The issue on the table is not about law and order. We all want law and order. What do you think the protests are about? Because people want law and order. The issue on the table is, what kind of law and order is there going to be? And what has just struck home to me as one individual person in the world, hearing men I respect driven to tears talking about how they've had to raise, you know, I've tried to raise my son the way I've lived, which is that, of course, there's no difference between people, and people are people. And I've realized the last few months that's not enough, that we have to do more. And when we watch the last 2 days, and I've heard men talk about how they've lived their lives and had to live them, had to raise their families. And then last night, I watch a video of a 17-year-old with an AR-15 over his shoulder in Kenosha, Wisconsin, walking towards the police, okay, with people shouting, this is the guy that shot people, and nothing happens, and the police are tossing water bottles to them. And we know, Max, whether you want to say it or not, I know you don't have no fear of saying anything, but I feel, how is it not obvious that if that kid were black, they wouldn't have given him a water, because they would have killed him? There is no question about it. And how, you're kidding yourself if you don't see that. How we got here, it may be important, but what NBA players want, what athletes want right now, what we all want is, how do we make it stop? And if it sounds, I don't understand is why we all aren't saying, how do we make it stop? And if stopping the NBA games for a few days is going to give us a chance to talk about how we make it stop, then it will have been more than worth it.
Well, lastly, and I'll say this, and I agree with everything you said. I think right now it's a call for action. It's a wake-up call. It is, if you are not involved, if you're sitting silent on the sideline and you can't determine which, and all I ask is that you, I don't care, you know, I do care which side you vote, but I just want you to vote. And if you don't vote and you're about all these Black Lives Matter, then you've punked out, because you're not doing justice to Floyd. You're not doing justice to Taylor if you decide that all of a sudden you're not going to get out and vote and you change things that way. I'll say it and I'll say it again. It's not racism. It's not going to change tomorrow. It's not changing next week. But what you do is you start to build bricks, and you put the bricks in the wall one by one, and eventually things change.
We've been promising for a while, and I know this wasn't very grandy, and Max, for a lot of you who've been with us over the years. So I thought it's only fair that we share a story that, in a situation, I almost never believe there's a situation that doesn't have any sort of, at least irony, if not direct humor in it. I've been promising that we were going to tell a story for a while during games. Sometimes we don't get to it because the games are happening. But as we think about all these things that are happening, and I try to put a smile on my face sometimes, I think about a night that you and I drove back from the airport. It's about 2 or 3 years ago, and Max and I have been coming back from the airport for 20 years, and we fly into Hanscom Air Force Base, and both of us live downtown, or did live downtown, and we'd come in from Bedford, and it's about a 20-mile drive, and, you know, sometimes we've taken a car service, I'd have a car. In this case, Max had a car, and we were driving downtown, and I'm going to let Max pick up the story here in a second, but And I'll tell you what I was thinking. We're going down Memorial Drive. Remember, we get home late, so it's 2:30 in the morning. And we're coming down Memorial Drive at 2:30 in the morning, and Max is driving, and I'm in the passenger seat, and I see the sirens behind us.
See the lights just come on.
I see the lights come on, and I snapped into a mode of every story I've read, every movie I've seen, like, what is about to happen here to Max? And I literally am having these crazy thoughts in my head, like, do I try to intervene? Do I roll video on it? What do I do with Max getting pulled over here at 2:30 in the morning, and the police officer gets out of the car?
Yeah, we get out of the car, and I don't have my license. They're actually in the trunk, and I go to the trunk to retrieve my license. This officer hasn't said anything to me. Actually, has his hand, like, on his waist.
He did.
Just waiting for something bad to happen. And I finally get my bag, and I have my license. I hand my license to him, and he looks at my license, and he says, "Max, that's you?" "Man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I stopped you, man. Go on. Just go on home, man. Go on." But as you said, it was the fear that and yeah, we're not trying to be funny, but that is the fear.
No question.
Somebody had and I'll leave it with this. Somebody had a thing that we were talking before, and we talked about just how they raised their kids. And me and this gentleman had a conversation. He said, "Well, you know, what I tell my kids when you stop by a police officer, I said, what you need to do is you just put your hands, you know, stay calm, and you sit there and you wait for a police officer to ask you questions." I said, "Well, let me tell you how I teach my son. And this is what I do if I'm stopped. If I'm stopped late at night, what I do is I put both my hands outside the window and said, 'Officer, here are both my hands. And the only way I can do anything harm to you, unless I'm an octopus right now.' So if I have to," and I said, "You don't have to do that. And I do. And I'm a professional athlete who is popular around here." So I think that's the story that I tell you. People who have been of color have always had a fear of night and police.
Apologize to Christian Arcand. And obviously we went over that was inevitable, that was going to happen here. You know, it's been a unique 70 minutes that we've just spent together, and Max and I obviously will be back. It appears what we know right now, and again, we're all in a uncertain area, but it looks like Sunday afternoon will be game one of the Celtics-Raptors series. We'll be back with you then. The games will continue, and hopefully the subtext of this conversation will continue as well. I can't thank all of you enough for hanging out with us for this last hour, and it's you know, it's a comfort to know you guys are there as the Celtics get back to doing what they do and shining a light where it needs to be shined. Thank you all. We'll talk to you Sunday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.